Hello everyone, and welcome back. Today is Friday, October 2nd, 2009. My name is Angela Walton-Raji, and this is the African Roots Podcast. And remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. How is everyone doing today? Well, autumn is here. I think the first day of autumn was one day last week, and the weather has definitely changed. It's much, much cooler out here on the East Coast, and I suspect it's changing in a lot of communities across the country. So I hope you're going to enjoy the season. The colors should be coming out pretty soon. I think in the next 2 weeks, we're going to see a lot of beautiful foliage out here as well. Anyway, let's get started. I have a few announcements for you. October is a very busy month. Coming up, actually tomorrow, there are a couple of events going on in the greater Washington, D.C. area. In Northern Virginia, there is going to be a six-hour workshop researching African Americans in the 1800s. This is an advanced class for genealogists. The speaker is Char McCargo Ba, who's going to be giving the six-hour class. And this class is really designed to bridge really the years from 1870, going back in time to the period in which you can locate your ancestors and their slave owners. Now, this is taking place at the Alexandria Library. That's in Alexandria, Virginia, 717 Queen Street. There is an RSVP number that I have put for you on the podcast website, so you want to pay attention to that. The time is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., so it's a pretty full day. The cost, it is free of charge. So this is a wonderful opportunity for those of you who've been doing some research for quite some time to take advantage of that and go and listen to a very good presenter. I've heard her speak in the past, and I think your time will be well spent. Also, coming up tomorrow in the greater Washington area at the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian, I will be giving a presentation, which is the second lecture in a series of 10 that will be held in conjunction with the Indivisible Exhibition. Now, the exhibition itself focuses on African and Native American history in the Americas, not just the United States of America, but throughout the Americas, from Canada to the Caribbean to Central and South America as well. The presentation tomorrow is the second presentation in this series, and the location is the resource room, which is on the museum's third floor. The time is from 1 to 2:30, and I will be talking about methods of researching African-American families that are also blended families with Native American ancestors. And again, this workshop is free to the public. Coming up next weekend in Chicago, the African American Genealogical Historical Society of Chicago is holding their annual conference. This year it's going to take place at the Mormon Church at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on South University Boulevard in Chicago. The keynote speaker is Dr. Spencer Crew, who is now a professor of African American and public history at George Mason University. Their program schedule is on the website, and it really appears to be just a wonderful array of speakers that they have planned. There are workshops for beginners, for those who are researching ancestors during the slavery era, as well as sessions for writers and publishers as well. Now, one session did catch my eye in particular. Anita Boyd has a session called Lies, Big Lies, Balancing Oral Stories with Documentation. Now, it's kind of a dramatic title, but it really promises to be an interesting session. You know that so much of what we try to do is to sort out information that is believed to be true from that which is documented. The greater question is, when one finds data that is reflecting something that is different from what oral history suggests, then the question is, how do we as genealogists interpret that information? And how do we as genealogists present that information? Also at the conference, there's an authors panel with some of the organization past presidents, including Tony Burrows and Roma Stewart. Nettie Nesberry, who many people in Chicago recognize her name, is presenting a session on how to write a successful query. This is much needed. I know that I often read queries from beginners who post sometimes on my message board or sometimes send me an email or to a list that to which I subscribe. And they will ask for, and I'll quote an example, "Please give me everything you have on the Thompson family," unquote. Well, that's not a useful query, and the kind of query that really is not going to yield results. There is a method of getting a response, and I think her session should be very, very useful for beginners as well. Coming up at one of the upcoming meetings in October at the St. Louis African American Genealogical Society, there's going to be a presentation by Father Moses Berry, who is founder of the Ozarks African American Heritage Museum. I was very curious in terms of who Father Berry was, so I dug a little deeper, and I learned about his efforts to preserve the history of African American history in the Ozarks. Now, my family history, I come from northwest Arkansas and eastern Oklahoma. And that part of the country, both the Oklahoma-Arkansas line, it really lies in the Arkansas River Valley. But that part of Arkansas is really at the foothills of the Ozark Mountains. And the farther you go up into northwest Arkansas, as well as going into southern Missouri and even central Missouri, you really are getting into the really central part of the Ozark Mountain region. And I don't often think of a large presence of African American people, especially in the Missouri Ozarks, but apparently Father Berry, who himself is a descendant from former slaves who used to live in that part of the state of Missouri, he has really documented the history well, and he's opened a museum, which is Ozarks African American Heritage Museum. He's also kind of interesting himself as a person, as he's one of four known ordained African American priests of the Eastern Orthodox Church, so it makes him a little bit unique there as well. But going back to his museum, it's located in Ash Grove, Missouri, which is a few miles northwest of Springfield, Missouri. And if you look at a map, it looks as if it's about halfway between Joplin and Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Now, that area, that county, is really less than 1% African American, according to recent census, and it seems as if it might be an unlikely place for there to be a black museum. However, Father Berry has really worked hard to preserve the history of the area, which did have people who were black and who were enslaved and who lived in that small Greene County community. He's really worked vehemently to preserve the history of the black community in Greene County and establish this museum, and also is working to preserve an historic black cemetery in the area. So I've put some links there for you on the website to take a look at what he's doing. Of course, I'm hoping to see many of you in the next 3.5-4 weeks perhaps. Actually, 3 weeks, I guess, from now. The Black Genealogy Summit coming up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And as I've mentioned it before, I'll just simply put a link for you there on the website itself. I have some news for you also. There's some really good news coming out of Virginia. Apparently, the Virginia Field Office of the Freedmen's Bureau, the records from the Virginia Field Office, have been digitized and have been indexed. I'm specifically referring to the marriage records from that office. FamilySearch.org has digitize the microfilm, and in collaboration with the Black History Museum and Cultural Center of Virginia, and they were able to coordinate volunteers who indexed the materials, and now this information has been microfilmed, which is really great, great information. This is actually, this work with the Virginia Records is part of the pilot phase of a really, it's going to be an extensive project to digitize all of the Freedmen Bureau papers. And of course, that's going to take several years to do that. I understand that there will be some other states in this next phase that are going to be undertaken as well. So it's just really, really exciting to know that at least one state is up, and I hope they get to my states pretty soon, but of course these things do take some time. However, the Family Search site, as you know, or as many of you know, is a free site. You do not have to pay to subscribe or to use it. And all you just need is an Adobe player and just go and search. It's wonderful news for Virginia researchers. There's also some information from South Carolina. Pardon me. It will be a lot easier now for those individuals who are looking at 19th and 20th century information from the Sumter area. Well, within the next couple of years, there's going to be some really good information that's going to be digitized. There is a publication called The Item and the Sumter Watchman, as well as Watchman and Southern. These are among some of the newspapers whose issues really ran between 1860 and 1922. And they're being planned, someone is planning to digitize them and put them online as part of a project out of the University of South Carolina. And this is called the Digital Newspaper Project. Apparently, they will eventually digitize 21 South Carolina newspapers from this era. And this is just really, really exciting. They have been funded with a two-year grant. It's over $300,000. I think it's more like $350,000 from the National Endowment of the Humanities. And well over 100,000 pages of these newspapers are going to be scanned, they're going to be enhanced for viewing, and delivered to the Library of Congress. And of course, the Library of Congress has created this massive digital archive of newspapers called Chronicling America, Historic America Newspapers. And I went to that site to take a look, and I was just really excited just to see what's being planned as part of the South Carolina Digital Newspaper Project. And there are going to be several newspapers that served the Black community. Among some of those newspapers are going to be the Orangeburg Free Citizen, Missionary Record, South Carolina Leader, People's Recorder, Southern Indicator, the Charleston Advocate, the Charleston Afro-American Citizen, Charleston Free Press, Georgetown Planet, and Rock Hill Messenger. So this is really exciting that there are going to be a number of historically Black publications in the South Carolina newspaper digital project. So let's keep our eyes open for that. And hopefully over the next several months, we'll start to hear that some of them have been placed online. Speaking of newspapers, there is the I just made a reference to the National Digital Newspaper Program, which is the NDNP, which is actually a wonderful partnership between the National Endowment of the Humanities and the Library of Congress. And it's really hoping to provide just greater access, enhanced access to U.S. newspapers published really over a range of many, many decades. Well, NEH, the National Endowment for the Humanities Awards that are given out there, the NEH Awards, really support these state projects to digitize these really, really rare papers. And particularly what's great about looking at these digitized images, these papers are fragile. They're old, over 100 years old, many of them even older. And it's just wonderful to see that now people can go and take a look without any damage being done to the publication itself by handling, but it's there to be researched by as many people as choose to take a look at them. Anyway, the program itself is called Chronicling America, Historic American Newspapers. And I took a look at some of the newspapers, and they're not lots and lots yet, but I did see an issue or several issues of the Colored American, which was a newspaper published in Washington, D.C. around 1893 is when it started, and it went into the early 1900s, although I don't know the exact years. But I went and took a look at the Colored American. And although the images are not the complete run of the paper, this is probably one of the largest samples of this particular publication that are available to the public. And I was just so excited to see some of these articles. There were wonderful biographies of individuals, some of whom were educators, many of whom were people coming out of various denominations and various churches, community leaders, just wonderful information. And I've put a link to those digitized images for you. Again, the publication is The Colored American, published in Washington, D.C., beginning in 1893. So take a look. I think you'll enjoy seeing that. There has been an interesting story unfolding this week in Florida, and I really wanted to share it with you for two reasons. One is the story itself and what is taking place. And the second reason is just the value of sharing information, the value of getting in touch through as many different resources as we have. Here's the situation. In Sumter County, Florida, plans are underway to remove and relocate a cemetery so that this area where the cemetery is at the present time can be developed. And we often know what that means. Apparently, in the county, very little research had been done about the history of the cemetery. And there was a plan to just put a courtesy announcement in a local newspaper, and then just relocate those who lie resting there, and nothing more. And there was a statement that, oh, they believe it to be an old family cemetery, and that's all it was. Well, fortunately, there has been some concern expressed by the local community, the local historical society, as well as some voices are now coming up to speak about the cemetery from the genealogical community and the community of cemetery preservationists. It turns out that the cemetery is an historically black cemetery. It is believed that some of the burials go back as far as the time of the Second Seminole Wars. And of course, the community has changed in a dramatic way, and there are not many descendants nearby who can talk about who's buried there or where. But a very, very brief investigation by people in the genealogical community have pointed out that, hold it, this is just not some forgotten family cemetery. This is a cemetery of significance. The response I have been impressed by. Individuals, Tony Carrier, whose name you may recognize with the USF Africana Project, that's a project out of University of Southern Florida. Tony Carrier has expressed concern, as well as other individuals from around the country. There was an article that was published online, and I've been so proud to see how many people from different parts of the country have responded. A genealogical researcher from Chicago has voiced her concerns. Many of you know Sharon Morgan, who has a very good website, and also Bill Drayton. And this man is a descendant of slave owners from the Drayton Plantation in Georgia, has voiced his concern over the destruction and removal of the cemetery. And of course, I was very happy to see my friend Jack Robinson, who's well known in Onslow County, North Carolina, for his cemetery preservation work. He also has started to respond and said, hey, hold it. You all need to really reconsider this. The story has picked up momentum, and it's due to the fact that several researchers are sharing this story, and responses are coming forth from just various sectors, not just geographically, but people who are doing a number of things. Now, I noted the story a few days earlier this week. It was the first time I saw something about it, and I got something about it on Twitter. And then I began to see other posts on Twitter about it, and I've since passed the story on to people on the Afrogenius mailing list, and that's over 1,000 people who get this email. I see it's picked up a little bit of momentum also on Facebook, as well as on Genealogy Wise, which is a social networking group for genealogists. Hopefully, there will be enough effort to slow down the plans to simply destroy this historic burial ground. Now, I mention this because there are two lessons. One, of course, is the need to protect endangered cemeteries. This, as many of you know, is very hard work, and there are many devoted individuals who could never, ever be paid for what they do. Many people go and spend hours of their own time and their own money to work to preserve forgotten and endangered cemeteries. There's also the second lesson, the need to share information. Fortunately, those who've learned about this cemetery took advantage of the communication tools that they've had available. They have worked to ensure that others respond as well. Now, I don't know if there's been any kind of letter writing campaign or if anything like that has begun or what people are doing personally who may live in the area. But at least within the electronic community, momentum has picked up. And hopefully, I'm hoping that this burial site might be saved. There is such a great need for this kind of preservation. Many of us as genealogists, we become interested in the final resting places of our ancestors and our elders. We become interested primarily due to the discoveries from our own genealogical projects. Well, preservation and genealogy go hand in hand. In some cases, getting involved in a community issue such as this, it unfolds, and it's required, it's necessary. Does it distract from what we do as genealogists? I think not. In fact, I personally believe that it is a natural extension of what we do. We tell the stories, we honor those who have gone, and protecting their resting places is an obligation that we have to our ancestors upon whose shoulders we stand. I'll stop there for today. I thank you once again for your time. And remember, keep doing what you do. Keep researching. Keep documenting. And please keep sharing what you find. Bye-bye. See you next week.